Welcome to the Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Poppin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University, the Arizona Department of Education, or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All right, Dom, here we are again. What's top of mind?
Oh, excited for the guest today. I think he's a good longtime friend of ours. But first, okay, I have to ask you something, Chris. So I was on LinkedIn today and I couldn't help but come across this open position at the Arizona Department of Education for a CIO. Isn't that your position? What's going on?
So let's remind everyone, I'm employed by Arizona State University. I'm on temporary assignment for 6 months to help solve some things for the Department of Education. Yeah, it was surreal. So that went up just last week, and it's been out on LinkedIn now. I'm just getting some interesting comments, observations, and it really is surreal, right? In your own job description for the job you're in, that you're having fun doing, as you're preparing to go back and see all your old colleagues. Like on Monday, there's this big thing that ASU does called Empower. I'm actually going to that just to see everybody. We went to the football game. That was a lot of fun seeing everyone. So it's like I'm halfway through, so I'm got like, you know, totally focused on Department of Education. I want that to succeed, but I'm also trying to figure out, all right, what do I want to swing back into? What's the big thing? Work with Lev and the team and get excited about that. So,
yeah, well, I'll be speaking at that event on Monday. And yeah, I think, so do they allow you to like sit in on the interviews and stuff like that? Do you get to participate in hiring your replacement, so to speak?
You know, I think we're going to remove myself. Technically, I'm only a contractor as well.
Got it.
But I did bring in an interesting exec recruiter. She's been a mentor of mine for a long time. She's doing it pro bono. She's awesome, and we've worked out. Like I've orchestrated the whole how the panels will work. I'll probably have I'll probably do the pre-screen. You know, if we get more than however many, get them down to a manageable number, you know, 10-ish. So I'll probably do that part.
Makes sense.
But yeah, so it's gonna be a lot of fun. We have a great team. There's so much going on here that hopefully we can really raise the bar and continue the talent and just keep the Department of Education at top notch.
Awesome. Yeah, it's exciting. You've been doing great work. So, all right, Chris, tell us about the guest today.
You know, it's probably the person, one of the people I've probably known the longest. In fact, it goes back to when you and I were planning with Lev that first Smart Region event. We'd barely known each other at that time. That kind of brought us together. But Jason, I don't remember exactly how I was trying to get him to speak, I think, because of 100 Resilient Cities. In fact, I was trying to see if he'd get me that guy, Chamath, who's an amazing venture capitalist. I've known his wife for a long time. And Jason's like, I don't know if we can pull that off. But and he opened the door into some groups and we became friends. I found out he was an ASU grad. And then after that, like 6 months later, he calls me up and says, hey, I'm in Phoenix for an interview with this ASU Smart City Cloud Animation Center. I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, I'm the co-chair of that thing. Holy crap, we need to get you here. And I'm like, because I knew 100 Resilient Cities is an amazing thing. I can't wait to hear him talk about that. He's just got a great approach. He's got massive breadth. And with AWS backing, they can go deep. And I think people are going to be really impressed with Jason and what's going on there. So,
yeah, so excited. Not only his work is incredible, but such a just great human being, like great person. You're going to love his attitude, his enthusiasm, his passion for cities. I'm sure you're going to love this conversation. It's going to be a lot of fun. Should we bring him in?
Let's do it.
Here we go.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress, Together, let's make a new world happen.
Jason, please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Good to have you.
It is such an honor to be here with you guys. Congratulations, by the way. What number is this?
I think this might be 40 by the time that we publish.
Well, that's fantastic. I got to tell you, I'm really proud of you guys. I remember when you were talking about it. Hey, we were thinking about doing a podcast, and you did it. You went and you made it happen. And you know, it's actually been phenomenal. You've had some world-class guests on here, and it's I think very quickly become a pretty impressive tool for people trying to learn or stay up to date and hear from folks in the space. So congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. We're learning a lot, having a lot of fun, and get great people on, and it just keeps going.
Now you're in the hot seat.
Yeah. We try not to be too Arizona-centric, so it's great to come full circle and get the story of what you have to share. So why don't you start with some information about you? We found it's the best way to get kicked off and get the guests build rapport with our audience. And obviously, we'll come up to some of the more smart city things, but just tell us a little bit about your background and what you've done.
Is this the tell you about my childhood part of the show?
You say whatever. We've had people tell us what grade school they went to. No script on this one.
Yeah, no, I can do that. And it, you know, it's interesting. I think if, you know, my career has really been centered in community, and I can actually tie it back to grade school. There was a specific moment when I fell in love with cities. And I think it's something that's been guiding me ever since. As a kid, I lived on a little island off the coast of Maine. And so my elementary school was actually a one-room schoolhouse, and I was the only kid in my grade, which for Chris and Dom, that probably explains a lot.
Isn't that defined as homeschooling?
No, we got to go home for lunch, which was good. So I went, you know, Monhegan Island in Maine. So I finished up there on a Friday, and then we drove down to Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I don't know if you've ever driven over the Tobin Bridge, but came over the Tobin Bridge, Boston skyline, the Constitution, you know, all lit up in Charlestown, and just was like, wow, what is this? This is amazing. And this may or may not be good parenting, but we lived on Ellery Street, which is halfway between Harvard Square and Central Square for folks who know Cambridge. And at the time, right at the base of Ellery Street was like an 80s like playground. There was a place called 1001 Plays, which was this amazing arcade. And for the kids listening on there, you used to have to go to a physical space with games to play video games. And then next to that was the Orson Welles Science Fiction Theater. And unfortunately that burnt down. But the weekend we moved, the Orson Welles had their 48-hour science fiction run. And my dad took me. And so like I stayed up all night, like completely hopped up on Mountain Dew and you know, watched all these amazing science fiction movies. And I'm probably like still impacted by that to this day, but it's just cities are so amazingly vibrant, and every city everywhere in the world has these special parts about it. And one of the great joys, I think, of working in this space is getting to go to different cities and explore what makes them unique, what makes them special. And I think if you look at it from that standpoint, that community, that energy, that vibe, that personality, you know, the technology and everything is certainly secondary, but you know, how do you discover the true identity of cities and help to celebrate that?
That's amazing. I mean, you start with that juxtaposition of a small island off the coast of Maine where you're the one in your grade, and you get down to Cambridge, which is a vibrant community itself. And then you find yourself in places like 100 resilient cities, massive organization like Amazon and Amazon Web Services, and this Kick thing. Why don't you set the stage? We'll dig into those things in a bit, but just what was 100 Resilient Cities? Tell us briefly about Amazon Web Services and what is a Kick?
Yeah, absolutely. So let me actually go back one step further. You know, in my career, I've had a bunch of different things. I've been an AmeriCorps volunteer with the local initiative services corporations. I did about 10 years with the state of Massachusetts, which was very foundational, which I want to come back to. And I've worked in corporations, GE, Comcast, a whole bunch of different things. But all of that a couple years ago led me to 100 Resilient Cities. And I know you guys are interested in this. So let me tell you a little bit about it. It was a program created by the Rockefeller Foundation. And it, you know, it celebrated the 100th year of the Rockefeller Foundation. So they worked with 100 cities. And resilience, sustainability, huge, huge issues for cities around the world today. And so was there a way to help catalyze resilience? And the way that they went about it was funding each of the cities to have a chief resilience officer. And I think you've spoken to some of those. I think you guys spoke to Grant from Pittsburgh and others. And so actually having somebody in the city who's a champion, who owns it, and so not just dabbling in resilience, not kind of like, hey, I'm going to have this as part of my portfolio, but it is their portfolio and they own it. And as part of their work, they led the development of a resilience strategy that was very specific to the individual city. So looking at shocks and stresses. So shocks are those big things that happen in a second and can have a huge, huge impact on your city. So things like earthquakes, tsunamis, floods, and certainly we've seen the impacts those have on cities around the world. And then stresses are the things that are more of a little bit of a slow burn, right? You know, here in Phoenix, extreme heat, you know, and in, you know, it's just, I think today we were all excited because it just started to break. But heat is certainly something that you live with, extreme drought, things like that, that happen over time. And so each city goes and builds a strategy, and that gives them something to execute. And I think you saw a number of mayors around the world, you know, certainly Paris, Mayor Garcetti in LA, hold up these strategies and say, these are what our administration, our city is going to be judged against. And so it provided that infrastructure, those resources, and that kind of center of expertise to go help cities figure out a path and then and ideally execute against it. So amazing organization.
I remember meeting Chamath from Social Capital, and it was funny. I was there to visit his at the time wife about an initiative in EdTech, but I just ran into him and I was like stunned because I'd known who he was. He's such a high profile VC. And I just said, I do a little smart city stuff. He goes, you need to meet this and this 100 Resilient Cities. It's the most amazing thing. All these ideas. Like, and he is one of the biggest hype guys. Like, so I don't know. I've always found that very, very unique experience you must have had there. You saw so much, so broad, so different views of what's going on there. I only bring them up because I just remember I hadn't even heard of it. And I went and dug in. It was like, oh my gosh, how did I not hear about this? It's just amazing initiative.
Yeah, that. And so for folks listening, Social Capital is a venture capital firm that focuses on, you know, trying to do those change the world type things. And one of the things that 100 Resilient Cities did is enter into a relationship with Social Capital. And we had an event called City Exchange, where we brought together 10 global mayors, 10 venture capitalists, and then 10 startup CEOs to try and foster that collaboration, help each other understand what each is going through. What does it mean to be to try and run a startup? What are venture capitalists looking? Can they understand how the pressures and challenges that mayors have in running a city? And so we brought everyone together, and as part of that, Social Capital helped to underwrite the use of startups and new technologies to help address shocks and stresses.
Great.
Yeah.
So that's great backdrop there. Also, you know, tell just a little bit about what a kick is and how it fits into AWS. I think that's one other piece we kind of need as the stage before we start kind of navigating through some of the great work you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm actually coming to you live from the kick on a Friday afternoon. And if you ever find yourself in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona, come by the Sky Song and come visit us. So the kick Cloud Innovation Center is a collaboration between ASU, Amazon Web Services, and then local government. And partnering it with ASU was just an obvious choice. I don't know if you guys have talked about it, but ASU recently getting awarded for the 7th year in a row, most innovative university. So amazing culture, and is one of the largest research universities. It's got such a wide and deep bench. Pretty much anything you want to get into, there's people, and I can actually talk about that. We were doing a project with Phoenix Police Department today and had a couple professors from ASU just with amazing subject matter expertise to the table. So ASU brings all of that. Amazon brings our deep technology expertise. And then we also bring our culture of innovation, our design thinking methodology, working backwards. And cities, states, counties bring their challenges or opportunities. And what we're able to do is basically create a safe space. When you talk about innovation, a flavor of innovation is open innovation. So technology vendor agnostic, complementary, everything is open source. So it's not, hey, we're here to try and push certain products or certain things. It's how can we create a safe space where people can really figure out how to innovate and create new solutions for some of these really challenging problems. So yeah, the Kick's a great place. We've been open a couple of years now. We've done about 30 different projects. And I don't know if we can put the website. Can I plug the website? smartchallenges.asu.edu.
By the way.
So if you want to learn more, check it out.
We'll make sure to add it to social as well when we publish it. So smartchallenges.asu.edu is what he said.
Yeah.
Such an incredible resource. I know we'll dig into it a little bit deeper later. So Jason, you're on the hot seat. Here it is. We love asking this question to all our guests because it's one of the most difficult questions is, you know, what's your view of a smart city? What's your definition of a smart city? It's been interesting hearing our past guests from their different perspectives answer this question. So running the, you know, Smart City Cloud Innovation Center, talk to us about your viewpoint of smart cities, what's working, what's not working, and how do you bring that perspective into your work at the Kick?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we embrace the how do we help cities be the best version of themselves? And it's not even necessarily about technology. It's, you know, I think we think of it as the combination of urban planning, public administration, community engagement, all kind of powered by technology. But it's really, you know, going back to resilience, every city's got a different culture. It's got different things going on. It's got different resources and things it brings to the table. So how do we maximize the good, minimize the bad, and help cities, you know, be able to go into a future that's going to, you know, again, be the best version of themselves?
What a great definition. I love it. I mean, I love the fact that it's not the technology. Technology is the means, you know, it's about kind of understanding yourself and becoming yourself in the journey. That's terrific. So you mentioned resiliency in that answer. Let's go back to that for a second, because, you know, a lot of my conversations right now with city managers, mayors, CIOs, they're talking about resiliency. How do I leverage this federal funding that's coming down the pipeline, not just to help support my community, but build resiliency? So, you know, what have you seen coming from the 100 Resilient City program? What have you seen that's working well? And has anything really exceptionally changed in the past 2 years since you left? 2.5?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. And when we look at cities, I think the most valuable thing any city in the world has right now is time. And if you flash forward to 2050, 2100, the cities that are surviving, thriving, and doing really well are going to be those cities that take advantage of the time they have today to invest in the future. And a lot of the things that cities need, right? Water, power, fuel, transportation, all of those things, they're not necessarily quick fixes. They're, you know, big capital projects can take 10, 20, 30 years. You know, I mentioned that I worked in the state house in Massachusetts. I worked for a state senator from New Bedford, which is, you know, an amazing city. If you guys haven't taken a look at it, phenomenal mayor, John Mitchell. Two times in history, New Bedford was the wealthiest city in America, once during whaling and once in manufacturing. And it, you know, at times it's fallen on tough times, but it's also completely separated from Boston. And the state senator that I worked for, Mark Montigny, has been trying for 30 years to get rail activated, literally been working on it for 30 years and just got the funding to go ahead with that. So, you know, it's going to take, you know, 3-4 more years to get that online. So when you think of some of these solutions that are going to impact, you know, the future of our cities, they're not quick fixes. So time is really, really valuable. And so there's a couple of things that I think help with that. Obviously, having strong executive leadership that gets excited about taking risks, trying new things, having a clear vision of what they want to do. And then from a smart cities perspective, you know, I think a couple of the things that we've seen help a lot is thinking about smart cities in terms of evolution versus revolution. So there's the things that cities do today. Somebody owns it, there's budget for it, they're familiar with it. And maybe it's an analog process or an outdated process. And can we leverage technology, the cloud, big data, mobility, applications, automation, you know, sensors to help improve that process? But it's just an evolution of what they're doing today. A revolution are some of those more disruptive things that maybe someone didn't ask for, doesn't know about, but came in and has changed. And I think we've seen a lot of those come from outside companies, your Airbnb, Waze, Uber, iPhone, all of those things have dramatically changed cities. So I think looking at things in that term. And then the other way that I think we look at things is enterprise versus kind of the mission. So what are the things that cities can do to improve their overall capacity? Things like data exchanges, digital twins, things that build a strong foundation. So whether you're doing education, transportation, you know, any whatever it is, you've got that foundation and everyone's not building it as a silo. And then the second part of that is providing better tools at the edge to help the people that are either driving operations or driving service delivery to be able to do what they do better. So that's kind of our approach from the kick. And so we play both at the enterprise level as well as trying to do frontline services.
Yeah, I love it. It's such a great mix. I mean, it just works so perfectly well together. All right, so got to ask you though, Jason. So Massachusetts, I'm guessing the Rockefeller was in New York City. Were you located in NYC?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what brought you out to Arizona? Why Arizona? Why make the move from kind of some big time, big city out here to Arizona? What brought you out here? Why are you here?
I mean, other than to be closer to the two of you.
you just made Chris blush.
can I tell you guys a great story?
Please.
So my wife and I, you know, we were living in Massachusetts and we moved to New York. My wife ran a foundation, Midori Goto, famous violinist. And so Amazon called and said, hey, what do you think about coming back to ASU? I went to ASU undergrad and doing this thing with the kick. And I'd met Chris through the Smart Regions conference. And so it seemed like a great opportunity. I came out and actually the morning that I had my interview, my wife went to the same Starbucks the entire time that we lived in New York. And she was in line and the barista that she had always worked with had an ASU pin. On his hat. And she was like, is that an ASU pin? Why are you wearing that? And he was, you know, Starbucks and ASU pay for me to get my undergraduate degree. And so she was like, that's an omen. And she called me and she's like, you're going to nail the interview. You're going to get the job and we're going to Arizona. So that's how I got here.
Oh, I love it. It's so good. Well, we're happy to have you here, man. You've been such a great leader and helping us drive disruptive, even evolutionary change. So, hey, happy to have you. Happy. We'll have to find that barista and thank him for wearing that pin that day.
go ahead.
I was just going to say, and you know, the thing for people listening to this, which I don't know if you guys have gotten into, I haven't heard it in any of the podcasts. There is such a special thing going on in Phoenix. When you
tell us, we don't want to be the one to say it, so we love it. So, what's the sauce?
So, if you think of the last 10 years, right, all these people that have made software and devices and trying just desperately to get cities to do a pilot. And you can bang your head against the wall forever trying to get cities to go and try things. And it's hard, right? It's risky. It can be scary for cities to go throw stuff up. I think that the greater Phoenix region, certainly with the connective and certainly I think just the mentality of the people here is let's try things. We've got big problems and they're not going to solve themselves. And you know, there are things, extreme heat, rapid urban development, aging population, you know, all of those things are here. So no matter what part of the smart city space you play in, there's an opportunity to come work with really talented people here who are trying to solve it. And they're willing to go try things. And we found at the kick, a very receptive audience and the ability to go work with cities across the valley and beyond. So if you haven't taken a look at Greater Phoenix, definitely check it out.
Yeah, thanks for that plug. And and the kick, the ASU Smart City Cloud Innovation Center is kind of being a nucleus in one aspect for it. It is powered by Amazon Web Services. So you said what it was earlier. So tell us about some of the impact you're seeing. Like what excites you from how the kick is aligned to some of these municipalities, and what are they getting excited about as they go through it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, change is hard. I mentioned that some of these projects can take a long time. And I think what we've provided with the kick, again, is that safe space where people can come in with their ideas. We bring together what we call in Amazonian speak, a two pizza team. So, you know, no more than you can feed with two pizzas, although Dom always says I can eat a pizza all by myself. But it's something like 12 to 15 people. We had one of the big cities and the CIOs over here this week, and it's a safe space where they can, again, bring their team, explore a problem. And then, you know, we provide all the resources through ASU and the KIC to go build prototypes. So it's pretty low risk. So I think giving people that opportunity to make something happen that would be really hard for them to do organically with the tools they have on hand. So I think that's
a big part of it. But it's really interesting. I've actually, full disclosure, I've been to a few of them. With my ASU hat, people know I'm kind of in flux right now. I've helped advise and get things going with KIC. But it's what's interesting, it almost acts as the catalyst for action. Meaning you get someone with a vision, they come with a functional co-partner, and then they bring these teams. And I remember some of the early ones, like City Scottsdale, they're looking around, oh, so that's what you do. You're in the same floor, but I didn't know what you did. Same thing with City of Phoenix when we did the one with the whole service orientation. They had like right. six representatives, different service channels, and they hadn't worked with each other they'd emailed with each other, but they hadn't looked each other across the eye, and they hadn't like deeply understood. And you're working backwards, kind of helps them understand how to ground and come to a common understanding that where tech isn't leading with tech, that kind of obfuscates things or says, hey, do all these requirements and come to us when you got your requirements. And the business isn't saying, well, IT can't be at the table because they're a bunch of pain in the, you know, what's, and they just say no. And it brings everyone together and gets common understanding. I think,
well, Chris, I would even say the biggest transformation from what I've seen, and even our guests have, so Mark and Rosa commented on this, is the fact that transformation that's going on across cities, across jurisdictional lines, right? They're learning from each other's KIC challenge, right? Mark and Rosa said, oh, we saw what Scottsdale did through the KIC challenge. We're going to pivot that and use it in our city. Like the knowledge flow, the solution sharing, that I think that's even more transformational than just department. It's jurisdiction to jurisdiction. That's where we create scale. It's been awesome to watch the cities learn from each other through the KIC.
Yeah. Any examples you want to highlight, Jason, of kind of give people context of what's come out of it?
Yeah, no, I think we've done a ton of great stuff. And again, I would push people back to the website. But a couple of the challenges last year, we tried to do some COVID related things, and you've probably all read about evictions. Evictions have hit hard, really, really hard here in Arizona. I think Arizona's seen some of the highest levels. Everyone's been moving here, and as a result, housing prices have been going up. And so a lot of people in fiscal crisis have found themselves with the threat of eviction. The city of Phoenix received some funding, didn't really have a mechanism for getting it out to the people who needed it most. And if you look at the organizations that provide the utility and rental assistance, they're all over the place. Some have software, some are using Excel sheets, some are literally using yellow pads. And if you're somebody who's experiencing, you know, fiscal crisis, the last thing you have time to do is spend all day on a phone trying to make an appointment and then go down to an office. And so what we were able to develop working with Wildfire, which is a large NGO here, and then a software developer, Prefix Health, in about 30 days, we were able to stand up a tool that allowed people to upload self-service, upload their documents, and then allowed the agencies to be able to process the application, all without you having to get on the phone and do all these things that were preventing people that needed it, the help. So, you know, with everything going on with evictions, I think that's one of the things that's super replicable and helpful, again, to people in crisis. You know, some other examples of things that we've done, you know, we're working on open shot gunshot detection. trying to build a sensor that reduces the cost and makes it more inclusive. So instead of just doing certain areas of the city, you can deploy a larger area. And that actually has a secondary purpose in working with the Phoenix Zoo, who is using it in Costa Rica to help reduce poaching. So that's one
that disclosure. Jason had me out for drinks one night. It was pointing to me of all these places in Old Town Scottsdale where a sensor could go there and tell me about the heights and how that one won't work. And I'm like, how do you know all this? It's like, well, I work for GE, man.
There you go. And the other thing is, you know, we try to knit all of these things together to going back to that enterprise and the mission to be able to put all the pieces together.
So where is the kit going? Like how is it positioned? You said there's been about 30 challenges. What can you forecast a little bit of the future for how it's working and what's next?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think one of the things that we would love to do is export more and work beyond just Greater Phoenix. And, you know, we did a challenge with Durban, South Africa, Ithekwini, which is one of those cities that's facing extreme drought. And they're doing something like 40-45% non-revenue water, which means they're losing a lot of water. And we were looking at a data exchange. How can we bring the data from the water they're sourcing with the data from the revenue from the water they're selling and help identify where a lot of water is being stolen, where it's being lost to leaks, and you know where they've got bad metering. So I think being able to take all of the amazing expertise that Arizona has on water conservation, water, you know, supply water treatment. We were able to bring in water staff from the city of Phoenix. ASU's got an incredibly deep bench on water with the Kyle Center. And we're able to share some of that expertise with Durban to help set up this data exchange and help them have the analytics in that they could use to better understand where to make investments and take other actions. So can we do more of that? Can we take all this amazing knowledge we have here and share it with other places? I think that's one thing. And then I think the other thing, when you look at cities, right? Cities haven't changed that much, the structure, but the way they work has. So, you know, if you take a Department of Transportation that maybe runs the poles, and now everyone's coming saying, hey, throw up my sensor, do this, do that. But they don't really want to be in the sensor business. So can we reimagine, you know, some of these things, how the pieces go together and, you know, what's that vision state for leveraging some of these technologies to better orchestrate and actually solve the problem and not just be stuck in the structure of how things work today?
Yeah, so true. I mean, you're speaking my governance nerd language right now. It's not, they're no longer the lighting department or the streets department. They're the communications department. It's completely revolutionizing the way cities have been structured. And so that's exciting to see you kind of leading that charge. I'll be excited to see where it goes. I know I'm looking over your shoulder and seeing the Engage Globally. I know anytime I'm at a conference or talking to people, I'm saying, hey, this resource is not just for Greater Phoenix. It's for all of you. So if you're a city manager, CIO, city official, even a state leader listening, you know, call Jason, text him. You'll be happy. So, all right, Jason. So last point, you've had such a great background, the KIC, 100 Resilient Cities, GE, other private companies. Talk to us about anything else outside of all of those that you've seen that might be worthwhile to highlight as a best practice, something that you think could be revolutionary in smart cities that our audience would like to hear.
Yeah, best practices. You know, I think one of the things that is certainly exciting is the rise of IT leadership. So back when Marty Walsh, who's now the labor secretary in the US, when he first started his administration, if you went into Boston City Hall and got in the elevator, it still said MIS department. Cities had an MIS director who came and, you know, changed passwords and loaded software. And, you know, now, you know, CIOs are cabinet level officials that are involved in pretty much every policy decision. And so I think building that expertise, you know, in cities is something we've seen evolve naturally. But the next step, how do you backfill that with the data expertise, you know, and some of the other in-house things so that cities can do more? And can we, as the KIC and I think AWS, provide more self-service tools to help people. And so instead of things having to be big, complex, you know, procurements and builds, can we make things kind of go together easier? And I think you're starting to see more of that, more interchangeable pieces. So less, hey, I bought my software for my agency and this software for this agency. And again, more of those pieces going together. So I think it's a combination of having the leadership and the skills in-house, plus having some of the tools and being able to execute on that vision. I think that's a big, big part of it.
Yeah, totally.
So, go ahead, John.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, yeah, we had, you know, Kevin Jones, a former CIO of the Indiana Department of Child Services on, and he said the same thing about putting the CIO in the like executive leadership position. He even went so far as saying, if it's not their run, get out. But it's great. And, you know, honestly, Jason, just a kudos to you and AWS. It wouldn't, without technology and solutions like an AWS cloud, governments would never be able to think about being lean and agile as you think we can kind of get to. So, yeah, more kudos to you. And
we also had Mark Schwartz, one of our early guests, right? Talking about the seat of the table. I remember, Dom, you were really surprised of hearing kind of how he'd approached that and some of his other books, even though you couldn't get the sub part of the book right, got in trouble.
Yeah.
Hey, so Jason, as you were preparing, what question were you expecting that we haven't asked?
Gosh, I don't know what question I was expecting. You know, I don't know, maybe some of my favorite projects or, you know, that I've seen elsewhere, things like that. Global view, maybe.
So tell us your favorite project.
You know, so I think, again, maybe heavily influenced by 100 Resilient Cities. You know, I think, you know, smart lighting, smart parking, some of the things that we've seen over the last 10 years, obviously really important. I think as we go forward, you know, in this next 10 years, it's maybe looking at some of those really big things like water, food, power. You know, I can live without, you know, certain things, but if we don't have water, you don't go very far. And, you know, there's a lot of cities around the world that are, you know, pretty close to running out of water.
Even places like you wouldn't think, like Atlanta, have major challenges, like Atlanta as well.
And, I was going to say, like Jakarta, you know, Jakarta's 30 million people. That's a lot of people. And, you know, they're both subsiding, shrinking because of lack of water. At the same time, the sea level is rising. That's a bad combo.
It's not a good equation.
So I think the projects that I'm kind of getting most excited about are those that are, you know, looking at smart cities, but how do you go and ensure that cities are going to be able to tackle these really, you know, potentially catastrophic things and be able to survive.
So you heard it here, Jason and the Kick want to go after Jakarta and figure out how to offset low water, increasing water tables. That sounds amazing. Population. Cool. Well, hey, Jason, we always ask a common question of our guests as we close. And we know Dom and I, we can't do it on our own. We know you can't do it on your own. Is there anyone particularly appreciative that you want to call out? And knowing us and what the Urban Complex is about, is that they also can be potentially a guest. We'd love to know if you think they'd be a great fit for the Urban Complex too. So who should we call out? Tell us a little bit about them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I'm thinking about this in a couple different ways. So obviously there's amazing people in the space that are doing great stuff. And, you know, we read about all of them and the work they're doing. But kind of my background, again, I think I started before smart cities, you know, was really a big thing. And, you know, again, I came from the politics world and in public administration. I got my MPA and I went to Northeastern, and my professor at Northeastern was actually Mike Dukakis. As a former governor, and I think somebody who really truly cared, you know, very empathetic about helping people, and truly understanding the mechanisms of government and how they work. And I think that's something that's sometimes missing from smart cities, people who don't necessarily understand how to budget, how laws are written, how policies and, you know, politics, campaigning, and all of those cycles heavily influence the ability to go and get things done. And so I think of oftentimes when I'm you know, thinking of smart cities, I feel like having an MPA and having that background rooted in public administration has been really, really helpful. And in Dukakis, you know, he teaches at Northeastern, I think now at UCLA, and just, you know, the tradecraft in running government. And I think having that insight into how government actually works makes it so much easier to understand how to develop digital solutions to help. And so I think that background is, in particularly those types of professors and people that have that practical experience are super helpful.
You know, that's a very similar response. You were the one that actually opened the door to Mitchell Weiss through your book club. And he was on, he had kind of a similar aspect, and it's because he was a chief of staff, you know, so that's great. All right. Well, with that, Jason, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Jason Whitted, Digital Innovation Lead for Smart Cities at AWS and former Associate Director for Solutions Development and Innovation at 100 Resilient Cities. Thanks for joining us, Jason.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. Good luck.
Good to see you, Jason.
Yep.
The Greater Phoenix Economic Council, known as GPEC, was named the top economic development organization in the U.S. in 2020. As a data-driven regional organization, GPEC serves as a strategic partner to companies across the world as they expand or relocate to other markets. Over the past 31 years, GPEC has fueled the Greater Phoenix economy by helping more than 850 companies and creating more than 154,000 jobs. Leaders in Greater Phoenix are building the nation's most innovative and connected smart region through the Connective. This community-driven applied research model deploys technology at scale. For more information about GPEC, visit gpec.org.
Okay, Don, that was Jason Whitted. What'd you think?
Man, one, again, I told you, not only a great human, but what amazing work that they're leading. What a great, like, past experience, you know, Rockefeller, 100 Resilient Cities, now this AWS Cloud Innovation Center that's doing incredible work. And then companies like GE that was at the beginning of the smart lighting effort, just like killing the game. His experience is incredible. And I think the way he approaches cities as, hey, let's just figure out how to solve a problem. Let's not think about tech. Let's not think about vendors. Let's not think about brands. Let's just figure out how to get you down the process of solving your challenge in a way much more quicker, much more faster, much more agile way. And then we'll get to tech later. I it's such a breath of fresh air, especially honestly, in full transparency, living it here, watching our cities go through it, watching their eyes light up, watching them share the solutions. What a tremendous resource to have in our backyard. And again, like I said, it's open to every city, even Durban, South Africa.
Yeah, it's amazing to me some of them aren't using it. I wonder why. But those that are, they keep coming back. They keep getting more ideas. They keep getting more stuff. They share it with the others. Like, so yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah. What about you? What'd you think?
Well, you know, as I was hearing him speak, he reminded me of a recent guest, Como. And what I mean by that is when he was talking about these cities, the cities that are the greatest, they're thinking with time. And they're thinking of along the axes of evolution and revolution, meaning they know they have to transform. The structure of the city hasn't changed all that much, but it's changing. But the mechanics and the processes are changing significantly in the things they're doing. And so what reason why I say it reminds me of Arbor Spark is they started with this thing and then they added this thing and then they added this thing and then they added this thing. And they all of a sudden they've got this indefensible moat or defensible moat of all this infrastructure that it's going to be very challenging to go and compete against that for economic development thesis. And so in this regard, like he's thinking on the planes of creating capacity, data exchanges. Once we get one, and there's things in work where cities will have a data exchange. Once a digital twin exists, you now can use that thing forever and you can keep adding to it and keep learning new insights and keep programming it. And the digital twin, you can run new scenarios and do all sorts of stuff. And so that's the mindset that he's thinking and bringing to our landscape. Now, obviously, it's been mainly local, but you hear they're thinking about how do we go big and how do we get ones that want to go even bigger. That stuff feeds back here too, right? So it's just exciting. Jason gets me pumped. The kick's awesome.
Yeah, and you know what he said that you just reminded me of is this idea, and because I have my master's in public administration as well as my law degree. But the MPA helps me so much because as I'm talking with cities, trying to think of new solutions and trying to really think of new creative governance models, I get the inside workings. And so they connect with me immediately. And it's just interesting to see, you know, the private sector with someone with an MPA and why their AWS has been so great at connecting with our local governments is because he understands, okay, yeah, you can't just
he come totally gets it.
He gets it. And so
he navigates through, he can speak their language. Totally. And it's like,
I'm wondering if this is a tactic that instead of, you know, because a lot of industry actually lets you go back.
Leave and get the tech. Come check on my tech.
No. I'm talking about most industry partners will actually let you go back and get continuing education. Maybe they should focus on, especially tech that's serving government, go back and get your MPA. So that it's not. Not your MBA. Maybe your MPA, because if we're trying to
remember the possibility, Mitchell Weiss's book that we're given, you know, I got to get my ducks in a row and start giving that out to our guests. But like that chapter where he talked about the best talent is going to go into public sector because there's so much opportunity. To your point, if they've got some tech skills and they go get an MPA, they're positioned for an amazing thing. And Jason's leveraging that. Like he's navigating all this amazing stuff. He's teaching Ryan Hendricks, who's also there. He's the general manager of the Kick. He's an ASU employee. I mean, those guys are making stuff happen. It's really cool.
Yeah, but it's because they understand you. It's, you know, so many times you need to build a relationship first before you can even talk anything smart city. And so they just understand because cities, you need that translator. So yeah, great.
Speaking of which, I actually really liked his definition. Help cities be the best version of themselves. Maximize the good and minimize the bad of each city's unique aspects. I took that verbatim. I think it's pretty damn good.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying it's really good. I mean, just be the best version of yourself. What do you want to be? Go be it. Right. And if it's tech, if it's not tech, if it's whatever, just go be it. Yeah. I mean, wow. What a great definition.
Yeah. Cool.
So that was Jason. I'm sure a lot of our guests and listeners will be reaching out to him to try to do their own kicks. So excited to see what comes of it. But so,
look on our social. He'll definitely he's super, super approachable.
Well, we'll post it. So, cracks in the pavement, what do you got for us?
Well, Jason was touting Arizona State University, its innovation, its research. It's funny. I go look on some articles. I find this one. Cool pavements research build as temperature rises. He mentioned one of the things going on in Arizona, why he moved, is there's so many big challenges, right? Where our heat's going up, we've got these urban highlights. Well, so some ASU researchers in the city of Phoenix have partnered with, separately, Massachusetts MIT's Concrete Sustainability Hub is also looking at this. So we've got two powerhouses in innovation and research are looking at the same thing. How do they find ways to cool pavements as our with air temperatures, greenhouse gases reduction, and whatnot? Like it's just kind of neat to see where there's a problem, you can find unique ways to go after it. In fact, in June, City of Phoenix experienced 6 consecutive days when the high was at least 115 degrees, and the heat waves are impacting. You heard Jason talk about homelessness is increasing because it's getting so expensive here. Like there's just so many reasons why we need to look at pavement. So they're thinking about ways to, there's all sorts of things they're doing. They're doing more canopy cover, more shade. So trees, obviously you want to get trees that aren't water hogs because we don't have a ton of water either. But I don't know, what stuck out to you? I know you've been working with City of Phoenix on this very issue.
No, I mean, I love this, what they've done. I don't know if you saw, but also they hired actually an ASU associate professor. I think his name is David Hondula. I actually, again, going back to the MPA, while I was getting my MPA and I was trying to proclaim smart cities in ASU's program, he reached out to me and we had a conversation about, hey, I'm doing work on, you know, urban heat. This was 5 years ago. And now he's hired at the City of Phoenix to lead. I think they have like a first in the nation urban heat department. So it's everything we talk about with urban complex, like bringing together academia, researchers, the universities, with government, with private sector, to come together to solve a problem. Like, who says you can't hire an associate professor to come lead a division of your school or of your city and help you solve a very difficult challenge located within your city? Because, you know, he has access to obviously the rest of ASU still. He has access to private companies. It's going to be amazing to watch this. And guess what? Urban heat is not a issue that City of Phoenix faces alone. Think about all over the world where if they solve something great here, it could be scaled.
Well, so, you know, I was reading even deeper. They're actually looking in to have the pavement properties change over time and with sun exposure. And so they're literally thinking about how to change the mix of carbon mix that's in the pavement so that it doesn't deteriorate the same way, so that it has reflective properties. Like, it's just amazing where innovation is coming depending on what we're challenged with. So
I mean,
of the urban complex. That's what I love about it.
Well, these are the stories we need to tell. I mean, I just read about Michigan and my friend Trevor Powell up there, who's the chief mobility officer for the governor, saying, hey, we're going to be the first place to charge, the street will charge your electric vehicle as it drives. Okay, let's tell the story. Let's see if it works. Let's learn from it. Which is interesting
because I was on this EV panel at that Center for Towns and League of Towns and Cities, and this mayor asked me, I was saying how I've been an electric vehicle driver for 7 years, and I haven't gotten a single gas trip because I just charge at home. And the guy goes, wait a second, that means you haven't paid a dime in tax. I'm like, ooh. So I said, I hope someone policy wise can answer that, because that's not the way I intended it. I'm doing it for the customer view. But so just there, they're solving it. How do you get the tax while they're driving? Because that's what generates the revenue to offset where the things are going to change.
Well, so, yeah, and maybe my last point again, being the governance nerd and the founding nerd, our country was built on this idea of small little laboratories across the country learning from each other. One city does this, you learn. One city does, right? So that's all we're becoming. We're literally becoming a smart cities laboratories all across the country. Michigan's focusing on electric vehicle road infrastructure. We're focusing on urban heat sidewalk infrastructure. We're all going to share this information. This is why the urban complex exists.
Well, we have this kick, this asset right in our backyard. Cities are using it. You know, it's only a matter of time. So it's great thinking.
What a great episode.
Cool. All right. Well, that's a wrap, everyone. See you next time. Thanks all.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.